to start today's episode with a dream. I dream of a world where healing is a concept that is embraced by the culture, so we don't go about life inflicting pain on others because of our own unhealed wounds. Carl Jung has a famous quote that says, "Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate." Today on episode 2 of Know Thyself, I'm taking a deep dive into healing and inner child healing work with an amazing woman on a mission.
I think my passion has been going in waves, but my general passion is to promote mental health awareness in Oman, because I feel that the stigma is really strong and a lot of people still believe that going to a therapist means that you're crazy or that something is wrong.
This is Sura Al-Masqati, a counselor and a psychotherapist, founder and managing director of Oasis of Hope Counseling Center in Muscat.
My main work and efforts initially when I started this mission 3 years ago was to promote mental awareness. And then I think the mission just keeps evolving over time. So then it moved to a more holistic view of mental health. So in the fact of like focusing not just on the physical aspects, but the mental health aspects and kind of like promoting a holistic view of mental health and mental wellness so that, you know, there's not one way of healing. And also the idea, which is the premise that Oasis of Hope Counseling Center is based on, is that when we're dealing with clients, it's not people who are sick or people who we are going to fix, but they are people who are just vulnerable and struggling, looking for support, people who need our emotional support, people who we are there to help them achieve their full potential. So I think I was talking to you about this earlier today, but the idea that comes with humanistic psychology, where we don't even use the term patients, actually. We use client, because we don't see them as people that need to be fixed. We see them as people that just require guidance and support through their healing process. So I think now in the journey or stage of my mission, it's more about promoting healing, teaching people how to love themselves, and helping people heal their wounded inner child.
I love that Sura mentioned the holistic approach, as that is the main idea of this episode, that one size does not fit all, and it's all about exploration and what works for you as a person. In my journey of healing, there were times where I felt really extremely lonely, untethered and disconnected. Here's what Sura had to say on the healing approach and where her passion lies in building communities.
I definitely do not believe in a one-size-fits-all model. And I think this is why, for instance, I work as I'm called an eclectic therapist. So I use different types of therapy models. They use this term in the UK. So anyone who uses a lot of different approaches, they call them eclectic therapists. And because I use something called cognitive behavioral therapy, I use DBT, which is dialectic behavioral therapy. I use psychodynamic theory. I use person-centered theory. I used a bit of Gestalt, and recently got really, really into inner child work and repair. Parenting, which is a new thing for me too. It's my new passion. So I definitely don't believe that there's a one size fits all. And I've always had an issue with the fact that people would think that therapy is the only way of healing. And I mean, I'm a therapist and I'm saying this and I'm saying it and I'll say it again. It's not the only way to heal. Therapy is one way, but so can yoga, so can meditation, so can life coaching. As long as all of these things are ethically done within, you know, their sphere of experience, we can find healing in different ways. I think the main thing that you're hitting on that I really resonate is the feeling of loneliness that you felt. And I felt this and seen this so much with my clients. And this has literally why my mission for the last year was to create communities, you know? So I started the Mental Health Book Club 3 years ago, before I actually opened Oasis of Hope. And one of it's because people kept messaging me, okay, Sura, what do you think of this book? Okay, Sura, what do you think? All my followers on Instagram, people I don't know would ask me about these books. And some of these books were just awful or so harmful for mental health. And I was like, okay, let's do this, you know? And then I decided to make a mental health book club. I wanted it to be free because I wanted everyone to have access to it. I wanted us to discuss and sit and talk about books that would actually promote people in their healing. And then after that, I felt that while the mental health book club existed, I felt people needed something deeper. They needed a deeper access. I saw so many of my clients struggling and not having access to support or not having people around them that they could talk to. And that's actually what inspired the inner child healing community. I wanted people to have a space where they can talk to people who are like-minded, who are struggling and not feel so alone. And this has been my last focus for the last year. Because I think most of us will struggle with mental illness or mental health problems. So 1 in 4 people, that's a statistic, right? And most of us feel so alone. And then the moment we hear that someone else is struggling, it's like, okay, I'm no longer so alone. It's not so scary, you know? Someone else is with me on that boat, you know? And I think that's a really powerful thing. And, you know, we humans, we're structured as social beings. We need social support. We need an adequate social support network. And some people are lucky to have it, but some people are not. And I kept being so frustrated seeing my clients not have these social support networks. So I guess I wanted to create them for them.
I remember back when I was hesitant to go to therapy, as I had this thought, I was stable, I was happy on the surface, so why dig up the past and disrupt my life? I think determining the why behind anything we do in life can be a really powerful motivator. I asked Sura to share her thoughts on why should we seek healing.
It's a difficult question because I think there can be a lot of reasons for healing, but maybe not all fit one person. But I think that in simplistic terms, if I don't understand why I do the things that I do, if I am acting in automatic responses based on childhood experiences or negative experiences, can I really have a content life? Like, can I really truly be happy and content? And then I guess it goes back to what do we define as happy and contentment, happiness and contentment, right? But I mean, if I don't understand, it comes up so many ways. If you're unhealed or whatever is unhealed, it doesn't just stay hidden or repressed inside. It comes out. If it doesn't come out when you're in your 20s, it comes out when you're in 30s. If it doesn't come out as a mental illness or mental health problem, it comes out in a fight with your husband. If it doesn't come out in conflict, it comes out in a physical illness. You know, lots of research link physical illnesses like cancer is controversial, but they link physical illnesses like cancer and so on to actual psychological issues or psychological things that weren't worked. So the problem is, you know, if the question is why, my answer is why not? Why not seek to be happier? Why not seek to achieve your full potential? Problem is, if I don't heal myself, the past gets dragged on with me. And if the past gets dragged on with me as I'm living my life, you have to think, Anna, there's like this huge cart of like rocks that you're taking with you. There's a huge pile of rocks. That's what you're doing when you don't heal yourself. You're dragging these rocks with you into the present. Why not let go of those rocks and start a new beginning? And I mean, letting go is not toxic positivity. I mean, it's not, oh, okay, just be positive. The only way we can let go is work through and resolve each of those rocks, each of those past issues, so that we can be free. Because I guess my last answer to why is because healing is what allows you to have a fulfilling, meaningful, and a life where you can seek your purpose. Because unless you remove these barriers of the past, you can never be free to be who you are meant to be. Healing helps you become that authentic self that you deserve to be. And there is no person that is not their authentic self that is happy. And I say that with all confidence. And I think that personal journey involves working on healing yourself and spreading the knowledge to those who listen, not forcing that knowledge on anyone. I'm a therapist, so I can literally detect it. I can see it. But I have a pact that I don't talk to people in my personal life about anything or so on unless they ask me. Because everyone heals when they're ready to heal. And that's a very important part of healing, is that you can't push people into healing or into changing. Change is so difficult. Even like you're talking about, you know, different ways of you tried this, and then you tried this and you tried this. And I see this every day in the counseling room, but also with myself when I was working on myself. It was so difficult, even though I'm a daughter of a therapist, even though my aunt, may God rest her soul, was pushing me to go into therapy from a very young age. Even then, you know, I went into my master's program and I was like, oh, I'm healed. I was not. I was so like, it was so superficial. The healing is hard work. It's painful. You sit with really painful things. You sit with the past. You work through things. You address your traumas. And it's not easy for anyone. So if you're not ready for it, you're not ready for it. We have a term in therapy called, it's called edge of awareness. So sometimes a therapist knows how a client feels before they feel it. And edge of awareness means that unless they're ready to know this thing, you don't disclose it as a therapist, because people have to be ready for that stage.
One of the most profound experiences I've gone through was the inner child healing circle with Sura. I came to know that her late aunt, may she rest in peace, was the reason behind it.
She was very unhealed. I could see it was absolutely frustrating for me to see that I can help so many people and work with so many clients and help them get the life that they deserve and help them heal. But I couldn't do that for my own aunt, because I'm her niece. So when I started working on the inner child healing circuit, I thought, okay, if it's a workshop style thing, if it's a circle, she can do it. So she's actually the first person who had registered for it. But she passed away before I ran the first one. So running the first one was very difficult for me because I felt her absence very much throughout it.
Grief has been a powerful motivator for my healing journey from all the losses and changes that happened in my life. It also went on turbo mode during the pandemic. There was also a sense of urgency that propelled me into this world as I was facing my loved one's mortality and my own. Here is what Sura shared on her experience with grief and what therapy gives you.
When I was 16 years old, my uncle passed away and he was 38. And then 2 months later, my grandmother passed away. And then a couple months later, my cousin passed away. And then maybe 9 months later, my other grandmother passed away. And then my parents got a divorce. So it was a lot of things after each other. And I would always think that this is what really... I mean, I always dreamt and thought of being a therapist before. My mom was a therapist, so I could see it. But it looked so much more glamorous when she did it. It didn't look so tiring and so exhausting when my mother did it. I'm writing a book now, actually, about my... it might be fictional, about my experiences with therapy clients. And she's mentioned in it. And I talk about... The first section, I talk about how she made it look like way more glamorous of a job than it actually is. But I always think I thought of being a therapist, but I think my hardship in life is really why I became a therapist. I had to really work to heal because I had really suffered from lots of losses and pain. And I guess I wanted to help other people heal too. No one was there for me at that time, so I wanted to be that person. But also there's a cute story of when I was being bullied in school when I was younger, because I was also like really, really bullied for a long period of time. I used to take extra math classes, not too good with maths. And I used to take extra math after school. And there was this teacher called Mr. Brian. And I don't know how it ended up happening, but at some point he became my therapist. He would listen to me. He would support me. He would so on. And, you know, whenever I'd get bullied in school or in class, I would, you know, ask to go to the nurse's office and just go and talk to him. And I feel like he literally got me through school, through those periods. And I think that's what people don't realize about therapy. Like, it's not just that you're going to someone who gives you techniques and analyzes. Okay, that's a part of it. But I think the most healing part is just having someone unconditionally accept you, someone validate you, someone empathize with you. Most of us lack this and most of us need this, you know? Most of us have love, but not empathy and validation. And when I think back on like my successful sessions, whatever that means, I don't think that any of my success comes from like analyzing them or, you know, making this brilliant connection, which, you know, sometimes I'm proud of doing, right? But actually, I think it's moments that they feel truly heard, seen, understood, empathized, validated. And I think that's what we all need. And this links back to inner child work. But I mean, we all have inner children that want to be heard and seen. And most of us don't feel like we are. I think all the answers are within. Too many of us in today's world are taught to seek these answers elsewhere and really, you know, all we really need to know is all these answers that are within us. And that's what therapy does too. That's what I believe. I believe when clients are coming to me or coming to us, I don't believe like we're doing magic or doing something. We're just helping them see what's within them.
When do you seek healing? When is the right time? Do you have to wait for heavy trauma to hit you for the healing journey to start?
Definitely not. I think sadly for a lot of us, that is what happens, me included. But I think that the importance of promoting mental health awareness and encouraging people to seek therapy or counseling is that to encourage that you don't have to wait to get to that dark point. Too many of us wait and too many of us are suffering needlessly when healing can be accessible at the first stage, you know? So I think if anyone's listening to this, I think thing to learn, خلاصه الموضوع, is that if you feel you need therapy, if you need there are things to work through, don't wait until it gets so bad. So many people suffer for years and wait for so long before going to therapy. You know, research actually shows that if you start therapy while you undergo trauma, that you're actually 100 times more likely to bounce back more efficiently and more quickly and more likely to develop psychological resilience within a couple of months. So not waiting till I've been suffering with the trauma for years, but actually seeking it throughout the trauma, healing becomes much easier. based on new research, like it's important to realize that the old outdated view of therapy involved just thinking that therapy was enough or just dealing with the mind.
A separate entity.
But now the holistic view, which I mean, not everyone has, but I think is important to understand, is that everything is interconnected. And we have to understand that healing can only occur in a holistic way. If I go to therapy, but I don't do movement, but I don't eat well, but if I don't take care of my physical health, then I'm still not going to be what I need to go. And if I take care of my physical health and I don't take care of my mental health, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, healing is meant to be holistic. We're not meant to just look at one aspect of ourselves.
As we speak of a holistic healing, the inspiration of the content of discussion of this episode was mainly inspired by How to Do the Work, a book by Nicole LaPera, a holistic psychologist. Here is Sura's thoughts on Nicole's work.
The thing about Nicole's work is she literally just, I mean, she didn't create anything new, but she just took different things that we all know. And what I loved so much about her work is it's so much, her process of work was so similar to my process. Because initially we start at, so being aware of your thoughts is based on what I was talking about, CBT and DBT. So cognitive behavior therapy teaches you to notice your thoughts, to be aware of your thoughts, to challenge irrational thoughts, to change them. And so many people stay there, you know, and what's great about her and what's so important about a holistic approach to healing or therapy as well is understanding that, okay, that's one step, but that can't be the only step, you know, that's one step in stages of healing. And, you know, learning to also separate. I mean, I have a client that I'm working with and she saw a number of therapists. Like she saw three therapists before me. And she's like, no one made me realize to separate my thoughts and that my thoughts are not me. So I've spent this whole time thinking all these mean things were me. And now I realize they are not me. They are thoughts. And that on its own can be so empowering, because when I'm struggling with a mental illness or depression or anxiety, I start to believe that these mean thoughts that I'm hearing are me. I don't realize that this is the mental illness, that this is the depression, this is the anxiety. I think when I start to separate it, then I can work on creating compassion and love for myself. But in schools like in New York and certain parts of the world, they teach these cognitive behavioral therapy skills, like being aware of your thoughts and dealing with thoughts and changing negative thoughts to positive ones. They teach kids in grade 1 and 2, which amazing. I think is amazing.
Yes.
Because I think if we were taught these tools as kids, how amazing would we be? So hopefully if any day I open a school, this is going to be the focus.
Yes, it should be part of the curriculum, honestly.
It should. Like, what do we remember in calculus or algebra? Like, how does algebra help me as a therapist now?
I really hope that Sura manifests this school and we have that for our future generation. Wouldn't that be amazing? In the next part, Sura elaborates on what she got out of Nicole's work.
My training in terms of person-centered psychodynamic was very holistic. We didn't see people as people to be fixed. We don't see them as how they're fixed. We see them to help them achieve their full potential. I think if she studied my program, she might not be so anti the classical system. But I get what she's saying, especially when you study clinical psychology. Because I studied counseling, so there's a difference. But I definitely resonated with a lot in what she writes. And a lot of it, there's similar, like we were using similar approaches, but I picked up reparenting from her. I did the whole self-healer circle because I wanted to see what it was like. I was implementing and doing research for my inner child healing course part 2. I believe you can only take people as far as you've gone. So I was working additionally on myself before creating these courses. A lot of the content is structured on hers and other courses that I took and stuff from my training. So everywhere. Yeah.
Have you ever struggled with being present and calming your mind? I certainly have. I leaned on meditation to do that, but at certain points that stopped working as well. I felt out of alignment because of it. It all goes back to how interconnected our body and mind is. In the following parts, we talk about breath work, meditation, and how to stay present.
Continually be reminding yourself and continually noticing your thoughts enough to recognize when the thoughts merge with your identity. And separating that out can be difficult for most of us, you know. When I tell people, you know, you're in a dialogue with yourself, they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, you're talking to yourself the whole time. And they're like, what? I'm not. I'm like, yeah, that's your thought. I make sure that I dedicate time. I'm lucky that my job keeps me very present because I'm required as a therapist when I sit in sessions to be present with what stories people tell me and listening in on what they're telling me and helping them. But I also try to dedicate times in between sessions or times in between day where I am present. Often in between sessions, I go look out the window and there's a specific tree that I look out in and I start counting the leaves or focusing on the colors of the leaves. And I can tell you every day how the leaves look different because of how much I focus on them. I sometimes sit and listen to the AC, which I find very soothing. I guess we all do here. It's white noise for us. us. And my AC in my room is actually quite loud, I think. And I haven't changed it because I love it. I just listen to the murmur of the AC back and forth. I sit and listen to the sounds. I always have candles in my room, so I usually watch the flake flickering. I have a meditation practice of before I sleep, I do breath work for a couple minutes, not too long, maybe 10 minutes. So I usually do yoga twice a week. And I find yoga is very, very important for my mental health. Like, I noticed that if I didn't do yoga that week, twice a week, I'm more exhausted, I'm more fatigued, I'm more so on. It's very important for me. This is why we offer it here at Oasis, because I really believe in it. Like I said, I believe in that healing isn't just through therapy. There's alternative ways to healing. I mean, breathwork is important. I mean, if people won't seek therapy, at least do breathwork, because at least you're teaching your body to be calm. And I mean, there's so many benefits. Like, I mean, if we go on, the benefits of meditation doesn't end. Works as a natural antidepressant, improves focus and concentration, helps with self-acceptance, helps with reducing negative thoughts. And I think sometimes when I'm like talking in sessions and saying all this, people are like, okay, why is she so into breathing? But often when after they start, they believe in it. So I mean, I'm obviously trained as a therapist. And I wasn't trained holistically. This is my own, me evolving. Actually, I would say that breathwork was the first way, holistic wellness, because I watched it, I learned it while I was training at SKU, and I hated it, by the way, so I couldn't do it. And I really struggled, like I had really racy thoughts back then. I have a naturally, actually, neurotic brain. It's actually trained to be calm. So I'm only calm and like relaxed because of my self-development work. Naturally, I'm not like that. So I'm very different than who I was a couple years ago. And even now, still, when clients talk to me or people talk to me about how calm I am and so on, I always giggle inside because I'm like, if only you saw what I used to be like. And then I started as a challenge. I was like, okay, there's so much research on this. This must work. And then I started reading up on why does this work? Why is it so effective? Why is this so healing? Because it activates that parasympathetic nervous system. It tells your body to calm down. It gets you out of fight or flight response. It releases oxytocin. It releases happy endorphins. It teaches you safety. Because the problem is most of us, because of the culture we're living in, especially like corporate culture and so on, we're not actually taught to be present. We're actually rewarded for multitasking. And when people tell me this proudly, I'm like, oh no, this isn't something to be proud of.
It's not real.
You know? But people are so proud of this. You know, we write this on CV, can multitask. But we don't realize, and so there's no real value given to being present. So because most of us have been taught like this, most of us really struggle to be present, and that was me too. But when I started realizing how much it would impact me learning to be present, and how much breath work helped change me in terms of like my anxiety or in terms of how I deal with things, because I used to have severe performance anxiety, actually. So I used to have anxiety in the sense of if I go speak even in front of 5 people, I would choke, which is hilarious compared to the fact that I like now give like workshops and I go for talks and talk in front of like 600 people or so on. And now it's a fine thing. I still get nervous, obviously, but now it's like 10 minutes as opposed to before stressing about it for like a week or two. One of the ways that I've learned to do that is through holistic healing. You know, I've noticed through myself, at first it was through breath work. And then I got into the nutrition aspect and I'd start reading. And I was always into nutrition before and now got really into it again. So I'd read, okay, but this is good, but this helps with this, so on.
Gut health.
And then reading about gut health and IBS and so on and all that kind of stuff. And I used to have IBS and struggle with it pretty much and found it frustrating. The doctors would just say, oh, you just live with it. What does that mean? What does it mean to just live with something? Why can't we create wellness in the extent that we don't have to live with something, that we can learn to better it and at least improve our quality of life?
Childhood trauma is a really important topic that I've been working on for the past couple of years. I asked Sura in this part on what her definition of trauma is.
Any event where you felt unheard, not seen, not validated, alone, abandoned, rejected, can be seen as childhood trauma. But it just depends from person to person. And I think what we often forget in childhood trauma is that when we're looking at it, we're looking at it as adults, looking at children, when really we have to see how did a child see this particular situation. This is the big difference. I mean, this is why a lot of people in the field of therapy, the trauma work now is very controversial. So some people reserve trauma for only big things. I don't reserve it for only big things. I think trauma is any incidents where you felt you were shook, you were unheard, you were not seen, you were neglected, you were abandoned. Feeling not good enough can be traumatic. I think it really depends on the certain situation. But I still remember very vividly when I was in my training during my master's, where like my tutor sat and she was like so dramatic and she was just like, back. Childbirth is trauma. We all go through trauma, and that's never left my brain. Because I think a lot of us experience traumatic incidences, but we don't heal from them because we don't acknowledge them as traumatic. Because they're not acknowledged, we can't move past them. We get shamed, and I mean, I'm telling you, people in the psychology field are now shaming people for saying, oh, you know, this is not trauma. Only trauma is rape or sexual assault or so on. Trauma doesn't have to be just that. Trauma can be in many forms. It can be as a child feeling abandoned and not knowing your mom's going to come back. That can be traumatic. We need to stop being so rigid with terms like trauma and open it up for people to define their own experience. You know, and I work with a wide range of clients, you know, some are naturally very resilient, but some, you know, are struggling because the world tells them, they feel the world is telling them that your fears and your pain isn't valid, that what you experience isn't traumatic. So who are we to decide what's traumatic? Let the person decide if it's traumatic for them or not. And we support them in their decision, right? There are some people who, the concept of highly sensitive person. So some people are highly sensitive. That's their nervous system. So some people are naturally, I'm one of these people, naturally we find things more traumatic or we're more sensitive to things. So does that mean our experience is less valid? Just because for someone else, they can shake it off. Different childhood conditioning, yeah. Different genetic, different yeah. upbringing, different environment. There's so many factors that play a role in determining. For some people, they can bounce off, by the way, childhood trauma or sexual trauma without it impacting. But some people, they can't. We can't compare. Everyone's experience is different. But I do know that the term trauma being in terms of like big things, quotation marks, is very limited and outdated, from my opinion. But the problem is we all have privilege. Everyone has different privileges. I might be privileged in this, but you're not privileged in this, and so on. And every experience is valid. And a key part of my work, key thing for me to emphasize, is every feeling that someone has is valid in a world that's telling us that we don't have the right to have these feelings.
How do you know you have a wounded inner child? As this subject unfolded in my own personal journey, I knew that I had a wounded inner child in two main instances. One was when I was having a very intense conversation with someone, and I remember feeling really unloved at that moment and saying, I want to go home. Saying that felt like a cry more than just words. It wasn't adult me speaking. Fast forward to a few months later, I did a visualization practice where the concept of talking to your inner child in a soothing manner was the premise. And I remember crying in that session like I have never cried before, to the extent that it kind of scared me a little. And that was when I realized I had a very wounded inner child that needs to be heard and needs to be healed. In this part, I extract a few examples from the inner child healing circle I had with Sura, and we discuss how healing is a journey.
And I think what we don't realize too is that in most conflicts and most interactions with people, especially conflict, it's mostly my inner child interacting with the other person's inner child. You know, you're thinking, why is he acting so childish? Because it's his inner child. And I think when we know that and we go into relationships or conflict with that in mind, I think it can be very healing for the both and helpful to understand others. This is very common in our society with women, unfortunately. We are taught that the voids can be only met by someone who marries us and someone who heals us. And when they don't heal us, then we are resentful and hateful, and that causes marital issues and so on. Myself, I tell my clients all the time, I'm not a fully healed version. I'm a work in progress. We all are. And I always tell them, any therapist, life coach, guru of some kind that pretends to be fully healed and worked out, run away. He's not the right one for you. It means they're not really doing the work, because the work doesn't end. And if you think it ends, then you don't really know what you're talking about. And you don't realize, like for instance, I'm full-time therapist, work on myself, did the work of healing and so on. And I always, when I go to the bathroom, this is a funny example, but when I go to the bathroom before, I used to never lock the door. It's a thing. Like, I lock the door if obviously I'm at a restaurant or something. Yeah. But if I can in my own room or my own house, I don't usually lock the door. And I figured out a couple of years ago, it's because when I was in high school, when I was in school and I was in grade two, there was this girl that locked me in the bathroom for hours. And I was trapped there for hours. Because every time I go to the bathroom, I don't want to feel trapped, you know? So I never lock the door so I can walk out. And I'd always be like, okay, this is such a weird thing that I feel. But can you imagine? That's something that I wasn't even aware of, despite all the work, self-development work that I do. So can you imagine how many of these instances exist that shape who we are and shape how we feel about things and shape our worldview and shape our concept of self that we're not aware of? So this work is important because without this work, how do you really live the life you're supposed to live? And how do you really live burden-free in that way? Most people are afraid of doing the work, or they have that strong mental resistance that stops them. And they don't realize that if I keep working towards or against that mental resistance, it will go away. Healing is a lot of work. The hardest work. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. Harder than any master's or bachelor's or anything that you could do. And fighting your inner demons. I think you were right in that one. And learning to love and embrace yourself, which is the hardest part, I think. I think it's easier to fight the inner demons and so much harder to love and accept yourself. As interesting as that sounds. Take the first step and take it one step at a time and remind yourself that you don't have to just settle for where you're at now. You deserve to live the best life for you. What Carl Rogers calls the good life. We all deserve the good life. We all deserve to be healed or to at least not be in pain anymore. And however scary it might be, just know that wherever you are, you can do this. And find people that can support and guide you through the right way, through the way, through to your path. And I think a key part of healing is to realize it's not about following anyone else's path, but about following your own. And unless you're really following yours, you can never be on the right one at your own pace. Everyone's healing at a different pace. Even in the circle that we're running, I send it as resources to people because I want people to be able to heal at their own pace. Some people are more ahead, some people are more so. There's no right or wrong way to heal. Some people take years, some people take months. Doesn't matter. What matters is just following my own pace. There's no race here. It's never been a competition. And it will never be a competition. The end goal is just working towards you. How can it be a competition when all you're doing is finding you?
Finding yourself is a goal, isn't it? On that beautiful note, we end part one of this episode on healing. If you wish to know more about Oasis of Hope services and her mental health book club, check the links in the show notes to know more. This has been your host, Maria Ocean, created for the Gola Project. But before we close, as a ritual now, I wanted to end this episode with a tribute. A poem that Sura wrote for her late aunt, as she was the inspiration for her Inner Child Healing Circle project.
So it's called An Ode to My Sweet Jasmine. Hannah, you didn't have to love me unconditionally as your daughter. You didn't have to take me for my school uniforms when I was 13. You didn't have to teach me about loving myself before loving a boy. You didn't have to help me move to Edinburgh when no one else could. You didn't have to take me to Georgia because I didn't want to spend Eid alone in Amman. You didn't have to, especially as a doctor, cover as an administrative assistant when I had no help at Oasis. You didn't have to non-judgmentally accept and love me no matter how spoiled or ungrateful I was. You didn't have to always be there for me. You had your own life and your own dream. You didn't have to live for us, your three monkeys. You didn't have to make my dreams yours. But you willingly and lovingly did, because that's who you were. You taught me to give to others while also loving myself. You taught me about boys and love. I am who I am because of you. Not a day goes by that my heart doesn't ache for you, that my eyes don't cry out for you. That I don't go to sleep, your beautiful face forever engraved in my mind. Losing you is the biggest loss of my life, one that leaves me forever incomplete.